This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Welcome to the sixth instalment of our series on the collection The Indignant Muse. This time we're going to have a look at the work of some of the many poets that were involved in the Rising, including Pearse, Connolly, Markievicz, Casement and Ashe. Sean O'Harcoin is with us again in this programme and he's joined by Helen Diamond and Gerry O'Reilly. On the 7th of February 1914, in the first issue of The Irish Volunteer, a song was published under the title Auron an Óglach. It was a makeover of the old Jacobite song Charlas Óg, with new words by Pádraig Pearse. A note under the text explains that after the Galway meeting, Sir Roger Casement suggested that Charlas Óg would make a splendid marching tune for the Volunteers. The foregoing is an adaptation of the old Jacobite words to the modern situation by P.H. Pearse. Nowadays, it is often printed under the title An Dord Féine, but is universally known by the first line of its chorus, O Roshe de Vahawala.
She the Bavan Bullen were, we are grack to the hing even, the goo he shall me lock. To deal the lesson of all. O Roshe de Vahawala, O Roshe de Vahawala, O Roshe de Vahawala, and Isher Yachtun Tauli. A granuel ek chakter salje, saiduri armele margarda, quelit fennig ail nos panig, skurfi ruiger gaule. O roche da vahawalja, o roche da vahawalja, o roche da vahawalja, an isher jakten taurig. A wheelerin a vart go veckum, mon a met bio in a year gach shakten, granuel agus mil a gash giach, si ek fogart fan gaule. O roche da vahawalja, o roche da vahawalja, o roche da vahawalja. An isher jakt an a taurig.
Sean, I wonder if you could tell me what it means to you, this famous song.
Well, it's certainly, it came very much to the fore in 1916. It was always a great favourite of mine, even from school days. But the whole significance of it was kind of reinforced in my own mind. With all the celebrations with the commemoration of 1916, because it was written by Pádraig Pearse himself, and he mulled a lot over it, because it's interesting that the main heroine in it is Granuaile, Grace O'Malley, and he is initially thinking of putting Bonnie Prince Charlie in as the sort of the hero, but he reckoned that he was too much of a loser, whereas Grace, he reckoned, was Granuaile was a winner, and that's why she gets such a mention in it. But it is a fantastic rousing song from a very old Irish air, as I say, for me, when I think back on the 1916 celebrations, I think this is the one that... But mind you, when I've sung it with a couple of friends of mine in concerts and that, and when we do it, we normally sing the last chorus very, very slowly and very softly to bring in that element of there was an enormous sacrifice there for all the warlike talk, for Pearse himself. It was a tremendous personal sacrifice, the 1916 Rising.
Of course, you mentioned Charles Stewart. It's modelled on a song about Charles Stuart, the Jacobite song, and apparently it was Roger Casement suggested that the older song would make a great marching song for the volunteers, right, and Pierce took him at his word and right, made the song. Great. Thank you very much. This song, When Labour Calls, allows us to share an interaction between James Connolly and either John McBride or Arthur Griffith. The tune that Connolly chose to set his words to was the air of the Transvaal National Anthem, hardly a piece that would have had much circulation in early 20th century Ireland. There had been agitation throughout Ireland in the late 1890s against the wars in South Africa and British imperialism in general, and at one demonstration in Dublin, protesters brandished the flag of the Transvaal Republic. Connolly and Arthur Griffith both took part in these protests, and perhaps during one of their meetings, Griffith, who had spent time in South Africa, shared the tune with Connolly. Sean McBride had also been in South Africa fighting for the Boers against the British. This was probably the factor that led to his death sentence after the Rising, as he joined that action almost accidentally and had not had a central role in its planning. It's also possible that Connolly heard the air from McBride. The tune is a complex one, the product of a trained composer, and not something that would immediately appeal to a singer of traditional song, but Connolly took his airs from everywhere, including Moore's melodies and the music hall, so this would have been just another attractive air that he could use.
When labour calls her children forth, a waiting world to win, its noblest breed, true men of worth, her rank shall enter in. Then comrades all prepare that we may hear that call anon, and drive the hosts of tyranny like clouds before the dawn. And drive our foes, and drive our foes like clouds before the dawn. Thou knowest long has labour groaned, a robbed and beaten thrall, whilst capital on high enthroned reigned lording over all. But knowledge came unto the slave, his power at last revealed. He stands erect, his new heart is brave, and the tyrant's doom is sealed. His doom is sealed, his doom is sealed, the tyrant's doom at last is sealed. We work and wait till womb of time shall give fair freedom birth to labour's host that hope sublime regenerates the earth. And by that hope we toilers fired to nobler deeds shall be, that we may guide by it inspired our class to liberty, to liberty, to liberty, to guide our class to liberty.
James Connolly's When Labour Calls. Did you find the thing attractive, the words and the music, when you took it on?
Oh yeah, it's a fantastic tune, really. I have been described in various places as a retro singer, because I love getting old sheet music of songs, and if I like the air or like the sentiment in it, that I learn it off, and I've performed a number of songs like that. And in your own book, you had given us the melody line of this. And after playing it a few times to myself on the keyboard, I said, this is a winner. So I put my heart and soul into it. And, I really like it. And also, not just from the musical point of view, but like to my mind, James Connolly would have been obviously a revolutionary, a polemicist, and he had written quite a lot, but I had never put him down as a versifier or as a writer of songs. And I think it's wonderful to stumble across this one, and hopefully maybe some other artist in the future might run with it and give it a wider audience, because I think it does deserve a much wider audience.
I agree, I think it does. I think yeah. Connolly was, you could argue about whether he was a poet, whether he had kind of those insights that are supposed to mark the poet, but he was a very clever writer of verse. There isn't a syllable out of place, the yes. rhymes are all perfect. Absolutely. You know, it makes for a very good song.
Yes.
Translation of Victor Hugo's Feuille d'automne. In this translation of Victor Hugo's poem, Roger Casement picked out a portion that was particularly resonant for him, a condemnation of tyranny, and translated into stirring verse. He includes Hugo's phrase, "The indignant muse," which gave my collection its title. I'm going to read it now for you. "I hate oppression with a hate profound, and wheresoever in the wide world round, beneath a traitor king, a cruel sky, I hear appeal a strangled people's cry. Where Mother Greece by Christian kings betrayed to butcher Turks, hangs disemboweled, flayed, where Ireland bleeding on her cross expires, and the German truth in vain fronts royal liars. Oh, then, upon their heads my curse I launch, these kings whose steeds pace bloody to the paunch. I feel the poet speaks their judgment, and the indignant muse with unrelenting hand shall bind them pilloried to their thrones of shame, and press their dastard crowns to shape a name, that on their brows the poet's hand shall trace, so man may read their calling in their face." Constance Gore Booth acquired her surname and title when she married a Polish count, Casimir Markiewicz. She appears to have had a penchant for violence. She dressed en militaire, armed with a revolver, for several studio photographs, and she also owned a German Mauser pistol, now in the National Museum. When this song, Armed for the Battle, was published by C. Desmond Greaves in 1980 in his The Easter Rising in Song and Ballad, he described the air as that of a Polish hymn. Perhaps she learned the tune from her husband. Markiewicz was the first woman elected to the British House of Commons and the first woman in the world to hold a cabinet position, Minister for Labour in the Republican government from 1919 to 1922. In the latter part of her short life, she devoted a great deal of energy to working among Dublin's poor, by whom she was much loved. The song is going to be sung for us now by Helen Diamond.
"Armed for the battle, we kneel before thee. Bless thou our banners, God of the brave. Ireland is living, shout we exultant. Ireland is waking, hands grasp the sword. Who fights for Ireland, God guide his blows home. Who dies for Ireland, God give him peace. Knowing our cause just, march we triumphant, living or dying, Ireland to free. The spirit of freedom floats on the ether. Souls of our heroes march by our side. Tone is our battle cry, yeah, it inspires us. Those who for freedom fall never shall die. England is breaking, shout we exultant. England is beaten, Ireland is free. Charge for the old cause, down with the old foe. Giving our heart's blood, Ireland to free."
Thanks very much for that, Helen. You're the first person I've ever heard sing this song, although I've seen it in print scores of times. And the tune is supposed to be that of a Polish hymn. And as Markiewicz was married to a Polish count, it's probable that she got the air from him. It's also remarkable that it expresses the wish that England will be beaten in the war and Germany will win. And that was kind of the general impression at the beginning of the war. So it was probably written around the early part of the war, 1914 or 15. Did the song strike you as being attractive or strange in any kind of way?
Definitely strange, I think. I suppose you have to consider it in the time when it was written, but in nowadays, I suppose you probably wouldn't find many people who would agree with the sentiments in the song. Not in Ireland, anyway.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever been actually sung before, not to my knowledge, unless some person in their own home decided to have a go at it. But I've never heard it sung. I've never heard the tune before. So you're probably the first woman ever to sing the thing. After Constance Markiewicz.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that, Helen.
Okay.
Thanks.
Let me carry your cross for Ireland, Lord. The hour of her trial draws near, and the pangs and the pains of the sacrifice may be borne by comrades dear. But, Lord, take me from the offering throng. There are many far less prepared, through anxious and all as they are to die, that Ireland may be spared. Let me carry your cross for Ireland, Lord. My cares in this world are few, and fewer the tears will for me fall when I go on my way to you. Spare, oh spare, to their loved ones dear, the brother and son and sire, that the cause we love may never die in the land of our heart's desire. Let me carry your cross for Ireland, Lord. Let me suffer the pain and shame. I bow my head to their rage and hate, and I take on myself the blame. Let them do with my body whate'er they will, my spirit I offer to you, that the faithful few who heard her call may be spared to Roisin Dhu. Let me carry your cross for Ireland, Lord, for Ireland weak with tears, for the aged man of the clouded brow and the child of tender years, for the empty homes of her golden plains, for the hopes of her future too. Let me carry your cross for Ireland, Lord, for the cause of Roisin Dhu.
Thanks very much for that, Jerry. It's conceivable that you might be the first person to sing that song since Thomas Ashe wrote it and sang it on one occasion in the house of Mrs. Bat O'Connor just before he was arrested.
I've never heard it sung. I've actually seen it from time to time, but I've never actually heard it sung. And I know that, like, with Ashe's death last year, like, there was a whole big sort of thing, centenary of it. And in all that time, I never heard that song sung. I heard Sean O'Casey's song about Thomas Ashe, but I've never heard that song. It's strange, like, you know, it's a strange song from that point of view. Like, it's very poetic from that. Like, I think he wrote it as a poem more than a song.
Well, he wrote it as a song, and he stayed with this woman. She says this in her statement to the Bureau of Military History, that he stayed with them for a week, Mrs. Bat O'Connor, whoever she was. And during the stay, he sang the song, and he remarked that he had never had any occasion to sing it before, and he was arrested a week later, and I suppose he never had any occasion to sing it again. Yeah. The tune, of course, is The Felons of Our Land, which was almost in competition for being the national anthem of nationalist Ireland in the late 19th century.
It's a great tune because, in actual fact, I was involved with the song project As I Roved Out, and I wrote a song for that called Streets of History About a Walk Around Dublin, and I used The Felons of Our Land as a vehicle for the words. It's a good song. It's an easy song to sing, but yet there's nice turns to it.
Yeah. The only one I ever heard sing the song was Brendan Behan on his recording of Irish Songs and Ballads.
I have a memory of hearing somebody sing The Felons of Our Land in the Church Street Club on a Friday night, and I'm talking about the mid-60s now, mid to late 60s in Church Street on a Friday night, I remember hearing somebody singing The Felons of Our Land.
Very good. Thanks. Pierce, Plunkett and MacDonough were regarded as the three finest poets among the leaders of the Rising. And we're going to have a piece of Thomas MacDonough's now. Anthony O'Farrakhan is going to read for us Song from the Irish, subtitled Taid na Rialta na Seasa Ver an Air.
Song from the Irish, Thomas MacDonough. Taid na Rialta na Seasa Ver an Air. The stars stand up in the air. The sun and the moon are gone. The strand of its waters is bare, and her sway is swept from the swan. The cuckoo was calling all day, hid in the branches above. How my storeen is fled far away. 'Tis my grief that I give her my love. Three things through love I see, sorrow and sin and death. And my mind reminding me that this doom I breathe with my breath. But sweeter than violin or lute is my love, and she left me behind. I wish that all music were mute, and I to all beauty were blind. She's more shapely than swan by the strand. She's more radiant than grass after dew. She's more fair than the stars where they stand. 'Tis my grief that her ever I knew.
Patrick Pearse was a fine poet in both Irish and English, and we're going to hear a sample of his work now with Eulach O'Connor reading The Fool.
Patrick Pearse looked forward to an Ireland when the barbaric poverty of his time would have vanished. In 1913, Dublin had the worst slums in Europe. Today, the majority of our people live in comparatively well-built houses on the outskirts of the city, and their children can grow up in freedom. Now, the poet, because of his special nature, often has an insight into reality which enables him to foresee the future. And ironically, Pearse calls himself a fool because his poetic vision had told him what the wise men of his time had failed to see. Since the wise men have not spoken, I speak that I'm only a fool that had loved his folly, that in all his years had done never a prudent thing, nor recked if another reaped the fruit of his mighty sowing. A fool that is unrepentant, and that soon at the end of all shall laugh in his lonely heart as the ripe ears fall to the reaping hook, and the poor are filled that were hungry, though he go empty. I have squandered the splendid years that the Lord God gave to my youth in attempting impossible things, deeming them alone worth the toil. For this I have heard in my heart, that a man shall scatter, not hoard, shall not bargain or huckster with God, or was it a jest of Christ? And this is my sin before men, to have taken him at his word. O wise men, riddle me this. What if the dream come true? If millions unborn shall dwell in the house that I have shaped in my heart, the noble house of my thought. And so I speak, yea, ere my hot youth shall pass, I speak to my people and say, ye shall call for a miracle, taking Christ at his word. And for this I will answer, O people, answer here and hereafter. O people that I have loved, shall we not answer together?
Thanks for joining us for this programme, where we looked at the songs and poems of some of the foremost actors in the Easter Rising. In our next instalment, we look at the songs of Paddy Kearney, who fought in the Rising, and whose songs recall the event more than most, and which are still sung. We'll have recordings from the Clancys, from Luke Cheevers and from Dominic Bean, and we'll be joined by Derry Farrell. This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.